ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। The word to word meanings, tam that newly born baby, tyaktu kamam, who was trying to avoid, mamatam, unto mamata, bhartu, tyaga vishankitam, very much afraid of being forsaken by her husband because of giving birth to an illegitimate son. Nama nirvachanam, a name giving ceremony, or namkaran, tasya, to the child. Shlokam, verse. Enam, this. Sura, the demigods. Jagu, initiated. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Mamata very much feared being forsaken by her husband for giving birth to an illegitimate son, and therefore she considered giving up the child. But then the demigods solved the problem by enunciating a name for that child. Purport: According to Vedic scripture, whenever a child is born, there are some ceremonies known as Jata Karma and Namkaran, in which learned Brahmanas, immediately after the birth of the child, make a horoscope according to astrological calculations. But the child to which Mamata gave birth was begotten by Brihaspati irreligiously. For although Mamata was the wife of Utathya, Brihaspati made her pregnant by force. Therefore, Brihaspati became Bharta. According to Vedic culture, a wife is considered the property of her husband, and a son born by illicit sex is called Dwaj. The common word still current in Hindu society for such a son is Dogla, which refers to a son not begotten by the husband of his mother. In such a situation, it is difficult to give the child a name according to proper regulative principles. Mamata, therefore, was perplexed, but the demigods gave the child the appropriate name Bharadwaj, which indicated that the child born illegitimately should be maintained by both Mamata and Brihaspati. So we'll offer prayers. Om Ajnanatimira. Hare Krishna. Before beginning this class, I would like to seek the blessings of all those devotees who are assembled here, especially senior devotees, who are my sources of inspiration. Today's verse talking about a situation that arose when, as exalted a personality as Brihaspati even, was affected by the lower moods, was affected by a very low desire. And this act is so condemnable that it comes out in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is very nicely explaining the difficult situation that the lady involved, Mamata, is undergoing. In today's society, these kind of situations, although rare, but are not uncommon. There are so many incidences where people are daily falling prey to low desires. Sometimes there is a talk that, oh, newer and newer diseases are coming up. So yes, we have eliminated polio almost to nil, and maybe some other diseases also, but then newer diseases are coming up. And there's a lot of talk of how actually we are not advancing, although the doctors may claim that we are advancing. But to go to the root of it all, what is that disease which is actually, you could say, very basic source of all these problems today? AIDS, cancer, today is the age of also mental diseases. So physical, mental, subtle, gross, whatever, what is the root cause? So once, long time back, His Holiness Trivikram Maharaj had come to this temple and he made a nice comment. He said, actually we talk of so many diseases, rog. He said the original rog is actually bhava rog. So the original disease is actually the disease of materialism. The original problem is that we came to this material world. Now that you have come to the material world, now that you have contracted the bhava rog, now it's just a question of time. This rog, that disease, this problem, that problem. In English, there is a term called a snowball effect. Snowball effect describes a situation. Sometimes you have an ice-capped glacier, and sometimes there is some wind or some disturbance, and a small piece of snow will start falling from the top. But by the time it reaches the base of that mountain, it's like a huge ball. On its way down, it accumulated a lot of snow on the way. So it's called a snowball effect. So originally, there's just one small problem. We are spiritual beings, but somehow curiosity got the better of ourselves. We decided to check out the material world. And then one after another, the problems started. Things started deteriorating. It's a common observance and an English saying, to protect one lie, we have to speak hundreds of lies. So it all starts with a small casual lie, and then it's very difficult for us to admit that actually I lied. I should not have done that. Then to protect that situation, we lie once more, thinking that, okay, this is the end of the problem. But no, a seed sowed may not be today, tomorrow, may not be tomorrow, day after tomorrow, very soon, some sapling, some small plant will definitely come out. Similarly, a lie spoken, sometimes it's not detected very easily. It may not be detected very promptly. Hey, you are lying. And we think that we have got away with it. But then very soon it's caught. By that time, we have accumulated a lot of benefits based on our lies that we have spoken. It goes on and on and on and on. Finally, you realize, my God, why did I do that? If only I had controlled myself when I spoke that first lie, I would not have been in this soup today. Similarly, we are so busy trying to solve all our problems today. Sometimes related to the body, sometimes related to the mind. If only we understand this, that actually it started with that one original rogue or the first contact with material nature. Somehow the nature of the world is that by the time we realize this, by the time we understand, so many problems have already surrounded us. Actually, a lot of time has already passed. They say, much water has passed beneath the bridge by that time. And very soon we realize, oh, I'm neck deep in anarthas. I'm already so much submerged. The six anarthas, kaam, krodh, lobh, mad, maya, matsar, starts with kaam, then the other followers are there. In the Bhagavatam, at one place, krodh, anger, is called Kamanuj. Just like Lakshman is called Ramanuj. Sometimes in the Bhagavatam, even Krishna is called Ramanuj, the younger brother of Lord Balaram. Similarly, Krodh is called Kamanuj. So as soon as Kam is there, lust is there, very soon the younger brother, Krodh, is going to follow. This one problem leads to another problem. One anartha leads to another anartha. So here also we find something similar to that, that a person who is as exalted as the priest of all the demigods is definitely knowledgeable, is definitely very learned, and in many situations he'll advise the demigods what is right and what is wrong. In the sixth canto, when the chief of all the demigods, Indra, he just neglects. He does not even speak anything offensive. He does not treat himself in a bad way or anything. He is just sitting on his throne, enjoying all the different acts by the apsaras, singing by the gandharvas and all that. So he's just too caught up in that whole entertainment that has been arranged for him. And he neglects for a moment, it is mentioned, to appreciate Brihaspati, his demigod, his guru, who had walked in there. And because of that, there's a long spate of problems that plague him later. Not only he, but his followers fall into problems. So definitely Brihaspati is like a very worshipable person. And in the earlier purport, the purport to the earlier verse, Prabhupada explains this. Anybody in this material world should never feel exempt from the effects of lust. And if you are not exempt from the effects of lust, can we say we are exempt from the effects of the later anarthas, krodha and all? No, they are very soon going to follow. So it means wherever we are, whoever we are, if our position is within the material world, we should watch out for even a small situation. So this is something that we can understand. First of all, that a person, even like Brihaspati, could fall to such temptations. Now the first thing that we can identify, whether we are in the material world or not, whether we are subjected to the discussion that is being had today. I am a devotee. I am already practicing bhakti. It's pure devotional service. However, we could be practicing pure devotional service in an impure way. Yeah, the process is pure, but our practices may not be pure. So then we can understand one very easy test to determine whether we are pure or not, even though we may be practicing a pure process. For that, we do not have any doubt. The process is very pure. So once His Holiness Devamrita Swami had come, he explained, when you get up in the morning, just check yourself out in the mirror. If you still see a material body, it means you are still in the material world. It means you are still under the curse. If you see that you do not have a material body, you are free. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Avadhut Brahman, he is mentioning about 24 teachers. He is narrating to Yadu, King Yadu, that as he is roaming around this world, he has seen different objects, sometimes living, sometimes non-living, and he has learned a lot from those objects. So one of the things that he explains is the deha, the material body. He says, the material body is my guru. And he describes material body by the word parakyam. Why parakyam? Because he says, any sane man can understand, after death, if the body is burnt, it's consumed by fire, it's turned to ashes. So much effort gone into maintaining this body, but it's turned to ashes. If somebody dies in some forest or in some strange unknown place where there are no relatives, nobody to take care of that body, it's most often hunted by jackals, vultures. It says if you nicely bury it in a luxurious coffin, today's coffins are very luxurious, very nicely made. So even if you bury it nicely in a luxurious coffin, mostly it will be eaten by worms. So he says, in this way one can understand that this body is actually parakyam, it belongs to somebody else. How much can we lay our claim to this body? So since he mentions the body as a guru, then it's common knowledge. It's not even a Vaishnava understanding, it's a common understanding that if somebody teaches you something, you should be very grateful for that, and you should serve that person, you should please that person. So a question can arise, oh, if this body is a teacher, if this body is teaching me this, should not I serve this body? Should not I give pleasure to the body? So then it is explained. It's not that actually the body is teaching us. It's not like a benevolent teacher. A teacher sees something and then he teaches on his own. No, the body is not like that. The body will teach us, or rather I should put it this way, we should learn from the body by seeing whatever distresses and whatever miseries come our way in trying to maintain the body, in trying to give support to the different demands of the body. In my childhood, I had a cousin who was very loving. He was very studious also, used to get high grades. And whenever he would visit me, he would always be very kind to me. So I would always feel, oh, when I grow up, I want to be like this person. I want to be like this cousin. And there was another cousin of mine, kind of rude, not very caring. So I used to feel, when I grow up, I do not want to be like this person. So there are some people from whom you can learn how to be. And from some people you can learn how not to be. Both are teachers. Both are teaching you. But one is teaching you how to be and one is teaching you how not to be. Sometimes in our association also, sometimes we can see some people. And we see, oh, if only I could be like this person. How much love he has for Krishna. How much dedicated he is. And sometimes we might meet some people outside. Somehow, you know, however you try to explain to them, it just does not strike them. So you say, okay, whatever happens, I would not like definitely to be like this person, yeah? So similarly, both are teaching. But one is teaching how to be and one is teaching how not to be. Similarly, some of the teachers that the Avadhut Brahman mentions, they are teachers of how to be. He talks about the earth as a symbol of tolerance, but the deha is an example of how not to do that. So in that sense, the deha is a teacher, and one of the words that is used there is, it can give us virakti vivek. Vivek is discrimination, and virakti vivek is the intelligence to get detached from useless things. The deha, the material body, can give us this intelligence. How to get detached from useless things? So already we have this material body, and it's already a source of problems. It's already teaching us detachment, virakti. Now within that, if somebody wants to compound his problems, if somebody wants to increase his problems, then he engages in activities of physical nature. He tries to enjoy on a physical basis, which is like a further perversion. You are already in a problem. You already have a material body. Already Kaam, Krodh, they are waiting in line to attack you. And now you are again increasing your liabilities by getting into physical pleasure. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma is in the process of creating, it is mentioned that he is a Prajapati. He is the first created being who needs to further procreate. But when the point comes when he wants to practice procreation, he understands that his present body is not fit for that. It is mentioned that his original body is transcendental. So just for the process of procreation, just for the process of further propagation, he gives up that body, which is later transformed into fog, and he accepts another body. It means when you want to engage in physical pleasures, you cannot do it in a transcendental body. You cannot do it in a pure way. So he has to accept a material body to engage in acts of procreation. So already we have a body, then we engage in physical pleasure. Now to compound that, further perversion of that is, not as per dharma, not as per scriptures, but physical pleasure giving acts done in an illicit way. So first there is a body, then there is seeking physical pleasure related to the body, but then understanding the fallen nature, the dharma, the scriptures, they enjoin us to do it in a certain way, get married, live a responsible life. Now, if somebody engages in illicit activities related to the body, it's like going deeper and deeper. You already dropped an anchor. Now you're dropping more anchors. How will you lift off? How will you go ahead? Already you are in quicksand. Now what you should try to do is get out. You are increasing more and more your involvement in the quicksand. Not a very good proposition. Here we are seeing. Brihaspati is engaging in something like that. So this is how the world is. Narottam Das Thakur, in his one of the bhajans, says, Gaurapahu na bhajiya maino. He says, Adhane yatana kori dhana teya ginu. He says, all my life I was trying hard for getting something that was worthless, adhana. And what did I do? Dhana teya ginu. I had dhan, I had wealth, that I gave it up. Apane karma, apane dubino. He says, by my own activities now, I'm drowning. Who is drowning all of us in the material ocean? This material world is compared to an ocean, but who's drowning us? So apani karava. It is we only who started it. It is we only who are propagating it. It is we only who are furthering it. It's up to us. We put a line, so we are not going beyond this. Already I have a body. Already I have engaged in so many physical acts, seeking pleasure in this way or that way, through this sense or that sense. At least not now, in an illicit way. I'm going to stop this now. But is it very easy? It's not very easy. Indeed, this material world is called Maithunya Agar. The primary characteristic of this world is that everything is based on physical attraction. So what do we do? We have Dasha Vidha Samskar. We have the 10 samskaras instituted in the Varnashram Dharma. It starts with before you take birth, Garbhadhan Samskar. And it ends with after you have died, Anteshti Samskar. And in between, Vivaha Samskar, Upanayan Samskar. So many samskaras are there in between. So what are these samskaras for? These samskaras are considering the fact, noting the fact that a person who's being born in this material world is already facing a lot of problems. He's already having a lot of hard time and facing the anarthas in his heart. He needs purification. He needs reformation. In today's verse, it is mentioned how there is a Namkaran Samskar for any boy, any baby who's born in the Vedic culture. But for that, there are certain requisites. And in this particular case, because it was an illegitimate son, they could not understand what to do. So this Namkaran Samskar or any other Samskar, it takes into account that we need some purification. There is some commitment from the person who's undergoing Samskar. Vivaha Samskar involves commitment. Garbhadhan Samskar involves purity. So this is Vedic culture where this recognition is there. There is no false hope that anybody who practices our culture is already pure. No, it's understood. He needs help. He needs reformation, and that help and that reformation is available in the form of samskaras. So this is a cultured society. This is a society of cultured persons, Vedic culture. In today's world, when I was working, one of my co-mates in the company, he went to the West. We were in a software company. So when he went to the West, he spent some time there, and when he came back, I was just asking him, so what are your experiences there? So he had some positive experiences and some negative experiences. But one experience that is in connection with today's discussion is that he said, oh, people there are so courteous, he said. I said, what makes you say that? He said, oh, you know, on a traffic signal, if they see you crossing the street, even though it is his right to drive, it's not a red signal for him, people wait. They stop at quite some distance just to let you go. So sometimes, because it's cold there, so then everything has a door, a glass door. You'll generally not find open doors there. So he says, if somebody sees you coming and that person is already at the door, he actually waits with the door open for you to pass by. So he opens the door. I mean, these are equals or probably in his case, because he was a young boy like me that time, it was an elderly person keeping the door open for him. And he was very much touched by that. So definitely these are good habits and these need to be inculcated in us. But the primary basis for his appreciation of the Western culture was these acts. How people smile at you, how people say thank you to you for every small thing. So that actually touched his heart. However, Vedic culture is not just about being externally very pleasing or externally very pleasant. No, it goes much deeper. Definitely, if somebody does something to you, you have to have kritagyata. Kritagya. You need to keep in mind what he has done for you and you should offer him something. So all these things are definitely there, but the solution offered is much deeper. The samskaras offer a much deeper solution. When you undergo samskaras, there is much deeper purification happening. The next life, if you undergo all the samskaras, antyeshti, till antyeshti, you are offered a better situation in the next life. So this is something that we can understand. And thus in this verse it is mentioned that Mamata was fearing being forsaken by her husband. She was fearing, oh, now that I have an illegitimate son, how will my husband treat me? So this is a positive fear, this is a healthy fear. In a cultured society, if you do something wrong, you feel fear in your heart. What will others think of me? How will others treat me now? And sometimes because of this fear, this healthy fear, that although I want to do this, I would love to do this, how much it is natural for me to do this, but I stay in the association of so many others. I would not want to displease them. I would not want to hurt anybody. In this way, in this simple technique of samskaras and staying together, many of the problems will be solved. So Mamata is undergoing this, and International Society for Krishna Consciousness also. If a person seeks initiation, a formal initiation, then he is supposed to take a vow. He is to take a vow that I'll never engage in illicit sexual activities. So this is something that is good and that is worth learning from this verse. Some other things is, we are all sadhakas, and we would wonder that we understand all this, it makes much more sense. So how do we deal it? Something practical for ourselves. In the Gita, when Krishna says, Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adi antavanta tu kaunteya na teshu ramate buddha. Then he says, Shaknoti haiva ya sodum prak sharir vimokshanat kama krodot bhavam vegam sa yukta sa sukhinar. So before this, these two verses, the previous verse to that is Bahya Sparsheshu Asaktatma. So in that verse, the translation goes something like, a person who is finding pleasure in the Supreme, he is Asaktatma, Bahya Sparsheshu. So he does not seek any pleasure in external sense, touch between sense objects and senses. So at that point, somebody can think, oh, this is about somebody very high. This is about the Acharya. This is about somebody who's already in touch with the Supreme, but I am not in touch with the Supreme. So what does Krishna offer to me? At this point, Krishna answers, Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. So he's saying, yes, this exalted person, this great devotee is already in touch with the Supreme, and that's why he does not have any taste. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, somebody who is already tasting sweet meats, he does not have any attraction for mud. So in that case, a very exalted devotee does not have any attraction for sense pleasure. What about you and me? So for you and me, Krishna advises, Adi Antavantaha. My dear spirit soul, please try to see, even though you are getting attracted, please try to understand with intelligence how any sense pleasure derived by our contact with sense and sense object has a Adi, a start, and an Anta, an end. So although your heart is aching to enjoy in that way, please use your intelligence. If it has a start, if it has a beginning, and if it has an end, Why do you want to get into something that is very soon going to end? Yes, there will be acute happiness when you enjoy, but simultaneously there will be acute distress when that pleasure is lost. When you eat certain foodstuff which you like, there is extreme happiness. But when that same foodstuff is banned, let's say you get a disease, you like sweets and you get diabetes, that same foodstuff is not allowed for you. And any time you see that foodstuff, it will give you acute distress. So Krishna is saying, please try to understand this. So that is his advice for us. So sadhakas can understand that if we want to progress, especially in the context of today's verse where a person was fatally drawn into something that actually he should not have done, two things are required. A combination will be required. What is that combination? The combination is, first thing, we need to have some higher taste. That higher taste may not be fully mature. That higher taste may not be fully blossomed. It may not be unmukulita. It may not be fully blossomed into our attraction for Krishna. But is there a small bud somewhere? If yes, good. And a combination, along with this, we should have intellectual, strong conviction. Nothing in this world is going to give me pleasure. Why? Because everything in this world is ashashvatam. It has a beginning, it has an end. So in the interim period, when it exists, yes, it's going to give me happiness. What about the period before that and what about the period after that? Lot of distress. So anybody who has these two things, he can go on. He can understand that I should not try to enjoy. In one of the purports in the fourth canto, Prithu Maharaj section, Prabhupada writes, materially, a man who does not have money is not glorified. That is the standard of glorification. And he writes, spiritually, a man who has a lot of attachment for family life, he is not glorified. Now in this context, it's very important to understand that when he says family life, it is not the ideal family life, the grihastha life, it is the grihamedhi life. A life that is centered around sense pleasure. Yeah, so that is something that he offers us. Another thing that we could learn from this verse is, Brihaspati and Mamata, somehow, they are both party to this. Brihaspati forces her, and although she is resisting, but she is a victim. But when the child is born, both disown the child. Mamata is also fearing being forsaken by her husband, so she also forsakes. So something that I thought is, because of our past conditioning, because of our present desires, sometimes there could be some mistakes. However, post those mistakes, we should accept responsibility. We should accept that, yes, this is what happened. Unfortunately, I would not have wanted it to happen, but it has happened. If we disown, we don't have any hope of rectification. We don't have any hope of purification for us. The first response of a conditioned soul when he is asked whether he has done something wrong, the first response is definitely no. Somebody who is a little bit more mature may say, well, I was there, but I am not the person who's involved. I just saw or something like that. So he distances himself a little bit less. Somebody who's a little bit more mature, he'll accept it, but he may not want to accept it in a way that, you know, he seeks some help. He just says, okay, I did it, so what? What do you expect like that? But if somebody is really intelligent and mature, he says, yes, I did it. I'm very sorry for that. Can you help me? Is there something that I can do to compensate for this? Can I rectify myself? And people who are really caring, they themselves will never fall a prey to these kind of things. But when they see somebody else helplessly struggling with his senses, which is your and my story, the sadhaka's story, even though themselves have never fallen in, even though they themselves have never been a party to this, they'll always extend their helping hand to such people. But what is needed is the person should accept that helping hand. Yeah, much help is available. However, are we seeking that help? Are we accepting that help? An old anecdote that I had heard, most of you might know this, that two friends were traveling in a boat and one of them was a miser. So some storm, some upheaval, and that miser fell into the water. Not a good swimmer, so he was about to drown. So this other person, he says, he's trying to save his friend. So he gives his hand and he says, "Give me your hand, give me your hand." And that person who's drowning, there's no response from him. He's struggling, he's just about to drown in a few minutes. And this person is wondering what happened. Why is he not trying to save himself? And this just strikes him. This person was a miserly person. So he says, "Take my hand, take my hand." So then this person grabs his hand. Because he was a miser, he had never gotten into the habit of giving. He never understood the meaning of the word give. He knew the meaning of the word take. So here was a person who was ready to give him his hand, his help is available, but that person is not ready to accept that help. Similarly, sometimes in Vaishnava association, there may be mistakes, but help is available. In today's case where Mamata and Brihaspati are undergoing problems, the demigods come to the rescue. The demigods say, "I can definitely understand, this is a very difficult case to handle." So they take the child and they give a proper name. The proper Namkaran ceremony, which should be done, is not done. Just imagine, for a person begotten, for a child begotten by Brihaspati, there's no proper Namkaran ceremony. But the demigods come to help. They don't abandon that situation. The demigods come and they say, "Don't worry." They give the name Bharadwaj. And they give the child in the coming verses. Purushottam Prabhu is going to discuss tomorrow. They hand over that child to Bharat Maharaj. They help Mamata. They help Brihaspati. Sincerity is required from our part. Abundant help is available. Prabhupada gives an example how Dhruva was sincere. He was sincere to find out God for whatever reasons. But when he set out from his palace to the forest, he was very sincere. He says, "I'm going to find out God." And in reciprocation to his sincerity, the Supreme Lord sent him Narad Muni. He never anticipated Narad Muni's arrival. He's just going on his path and Narad Muni crosses his path deliberately. He says, "Give him the real mantra. Give this child the real mantra." And that is how Narad Muni awards the supreme goal of pure devotional service to Dhruva. So if we accept responsibility, if we accept our mistakes, and we have a sincere desire to rectify ourselves, even though we may be facing a lot of problems, but help is available. So these are some lessons and these are some discussion, some thoughts that I thought were pertinent to today's verse. If somebody has any comments and if somebody has any questions, then we can have some.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, this episode of Brihaspati we are discussing here, you are saying that they were not taking responsibility, either of them. So then how demigods came to help them? Because from another angle, it's like just because he was a very important person for the society, so they're trying to cover it up, the thing, or like how it is different than the today is somebody does the thing. Because they, either of them, are not ready to take the responsibility, and from which angle they were sincere, actually.
All right. I thought over this, something that comes to my mind, and maybe Radha Gopinath Prabhu is there, Govind Prabhu is there, Shamanand Prabhu is there, they can clarify it further. The way I saw it is, Brihaspati is definitely not doing a good thing here. The way I saw it is, it's mentioned that Mamata was forced into this. She did not want to. She did not do it happily. So she does not want to do something, but she's just forced. In fact, it is mentioned that she was already pregnant. She already had a child in her womb by Utathya, her husband. So even that child forbade Brihaspati. The child pointed out to Brihaspati, "What are you doing? This is not advised." So the way I see it is that Mamata was dragged into it, but personally, if you ask, She does not want to do it. She's sincere. She's very much chaste to her husband. She's loyal to her husband. So that sincerity attracted. And as I mentioned, even Dhruv, you know, in one sense, he does not have very pure desires. In one sense, he just wants a kingdom that cannot be ever snatched away from him. But what is his sincerity? His sincerity is that whatever he has been advised by his mother, he sticks to it. Similarly, she is married, but she says, no, this is not wrong, but she was dragged helplessly into it. So I think that is that sincerity that we are talking of here, where, you know, the demigods came to help her. Seeing that, what can she do? Yeah, she was a helpless victim like that. But definitely the other person, as per my understanding, is not very much sincere in any way. You would like to comment further, Prabhu? Shamanam Prabhu, Govind Prabhu, if you would. Maybe personally you can ask them. So sometimes, you know, in a thing where two or more people are involved, even if one person is sincere, you get some mercy. Usually mercy means something that is given not considering the qualification of the person who's receiving it. Then it becomes mercy. If you see that the other person is this, this and this, and therefore he should receive this, this and this, then in one sense it cannot be called mercy. Then it becomes just a reciprocation, it becomes a business. He's intelligent, so he needs marks, like that. So, but if somebody is very less intelligent and just seeing his efforts, you know, he's writing some answer, he's not quitting the question paper, so then he gets some more marks. So that is mercy. So similarly, I feel that that small resistance offered by Mamata, that, you know, this is wrong, I should not do this, I think that attracted the mercy. That was her sincerity. Yeah, Brajvasi Prabhu. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai.